Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn today's meeting to Barbara Reynolds. You may begin.
Good morning. You're joining CDC's update on the Ebola response in Dallas. We'll have two speakers today and then take questions, both in the room and on the phone. For those of you asking questions in the room, would you please give your name and affiliation? Our first speaker today is CDC Director Dr. Tom Frieden.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. We're deeply concerned by the news that a healthcare worker in Texas has tested preliminarily positive for infection with Ebola virus. Confirmatory testing is underway at CDC and will be completed later today. We don't know what occurred in the care of the index patient, the original patient in Dallas, but at some point there was a breach in protocol, and that breach in protocol resulted in this infection. The healthcare worker developed symptoms on Friday. They were assessed last night, they were, today is Sunday. They were assessed Friday and tested yesterday, and the Laboratory Response Network laboratory in Austin, Texas, tested their result preliminarily positive. That result came in late last night, about exactly 12 hours ago, and I will outline the steps that we have been taking before, since, and in the future to address this. The individual was self-monitoring, and immediately on developing symptoms as appropriate, she contacted the healthcare system, and when she came in, she was promptly isolated. The level of her symptoms and indications from the test itself suggest that the level of virus that she had was low. There are four things that we're doing at this point. First, to make sure that we do everything possible to care safely and effectively for this individual. Second, assessing her possible contacts from the moment she developed symptoms. And the CDC team lead for the Dallas investigation has interviewed her, and it appears at this time that there is only one contact who may have had contact with her while she may have been infectious. That individual is under active monitoring. Third, we are evaluating other potential healthcare worker exposures, because if this individual was exposed, which they were, it is possible that other individuals were exposed. We know that this individual did provide care to the index patient on multiple occasions, and that care included extensive contact. Fourth, we will undertake a complete investigation of how this may have occurred. That's so important so we can understand it better and intervene to prevent this from happening in the future. I want to go into a little bit more detail first on what we are doing to promote safe and effective care, and then on the investigation. In terms of safe and effective care, we had already begun several days ago to ramp up the education and training of healthcare workers at this facility. The care of Ebola can be done safely, but it's hard to do it safely. It requires meticulous and scrupulous attention to infection control, and even a single inadvertent, innocent slip can result in contamination. Second, we are recommending to the facility that the number of workers who care for anyone with suspected Ebola be kept to an absolute minimum. Third, we recommend that the procedures that are undertaken on to support the care of that individual be limited solely to essential procedures. Fourth, we're looking at personal protective equipment, understanding that there is a balance and putting more on isn't always safer. It may make it harder to provide effective care. So all aspects of personal protective equipment. And fifth, we're recommending that there be a full-time individual who is responsible only for the oversight, supervision, and monitoring of effective infection control while any patient with suspected or confirmed Ebola is being cared for. CDC has sent additional staff to Texas to assist with this response, and we will continue to work closely with them. In the investigation itself, we look at three different phases. What happens before someone goes in to an area where someone with suspected or confirmed Ebola is being cared for? What happens in that space? And what happens when they leave? The two areas where we will be looking particularly closely is the performance of kidney dialysis and respiratory intubation. Both of those procedures may spread contaminated materials and are considered high-risk procedures. They were undertaken on the index patient as a desperate measure to try to save his life. In taking off respiratory protective equipment, we identify this as a major potential area for risk. When you have gone into and potentially soiled or contaminated gloves or masks or other things, to remove those without any risk of any contaminated material touching you and being then on your clothes or face or skin and leading to an infection is critically important and not easy to do right. So these are areas that the investigation will look at, but we don't know what it will find. We'll be doing that over the coming days. Before I turn it over to Dr. Lakey, as a commissioner of the Texas Department of State Health Services, I do want to make two final points. The first is that, unfortunately, it is possible in the coming days that we will see additional cases of Ebola. This is because the healthcare workers who cared for this individual may have had a breach of the same nature of the individual who appears now to have a preliminary positive test. That risk is in the 48 people who are being monitored, all of whom have been tested daily, none of whom so far have developed symptoms or fever, and in any other healthcare workers who may have been exposed to this index patient while he was being cared for. We're still determining how many healthcare workers that will be. That is an intensive investigation. It takes many hours of tracing steps. We'll always cast the net wider. There, though, is no risk to people outside of that circle of the healthcare workers who cared for the individual patient and the initial 48 patients or contacts who had definite or possible contact with the index patient who we've already identified. The second point I want to make is that what we do to stop Ebola is to break the links of transmission, to break the chains of transmission. And we do that by making sure that every person with Ebola is promptly diagnosed, that they're promptly isolated, that we identify their contacts, and that we actively monitor their contacts every day for 21 days, and if they develop symptoms or fever, we do the same process again. That's how we have stopped every Ebola outbreak in history, except the one currently in West Africa. That's how we stopped it in Lagos, Nigeria. That's how we will stop it in Dallas. So breaking the links in the chain of transmission is the key to preventing further spread. I'd now like to turn it over to Dr. Lakey.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. This is David Lakey, the Commissioner of Health for the state of Texas. And I appreciate all the support from the CDC that the CDC has given us, not only over the night, but over the last several weeks as we've been working through this unprecedented event. Our staff have been working throughout the night trying to gather more information, and as we get more information as appropriate, we will provide that information. But as Dr. Frieden noted, we do have one healthcare worker, a healthcare worker that had extensive contact with our initial patient, who did what was appropriate with early symptoms, came in to be checked. And we facilitated getting the blood test done. That test came back at 9:30 last night. And as Dr. Frieden noted, was positive. The controls were appropriate. The amount of virus in her blood was less than what was there when the first index case came back, but it is a positive test. So our hearts really do go out to this individual and to the family who is with us, a healthcare worker who is willing to compassionately care for Mr. Duncan. And again, our thoughts and prayers are with them. We have been preparing for events such as this, putting in contingency plans. And again, we're refining those plans, and a lot of work is taking place right now. As Dr. Frieden noted, the 48 original contacts continue to be monitored, and they continue to do well. And we have this one healthcare worker that now needs our care. And so, as Dr. Frieden noted, we are going to have been and will continue to monitor healthcare workers, stepping that up to make sure that any healthcare worker that has any fever or any other symptoms will be quickly identified, as with this individual. Continue to work to make sure the infection control practices that are being performed at the hospital are at the higher standard, at the highest standards, and fully evaluating what is underway and figure out exactly what happened that allowed this individual to be infected. And we've brought in more public health officials, public health staff, epidemiologists to make sure that we have the individuals we need to fully evaluate the situation. And again, appreciate the work from the CDC and their support for Texas right now as we work through this situation. Thank you.
We will now take questions. We'll start in the room and then go to the phone.
Sure. Steve Gelbach from WSB-TV in Atlanta. This healthcare worker, you've had multiple contacts with the original patient. In your interviews with her, has she been able to specifically isolate a chance where this may have occurred, where this breach, you say, in those interviews with her, talking about why you're specifically investigating maybe where she's taking off the equipment or anything, why you're focusing on that part in your investigation?
We have spoken with the healthcare worker, and that individual has not been able to identify a specific breach. The way we do investigations like this is we look at every single interaction, what was the nature of that interaction. We look at any other information we can gather. I was not mentioning the taking on or off PPE or the procedures related to the investigation, but as a general rule, these are the two areas where we see the greatest risk.
And, Bob, is this going to change the way healthcare workers anywhere, whether it's here in Orlando or Dallas, interact with these potential patients wearing more gear? What's going to change now?
I think it is certainly very concerning, and it tells us that there is a need to enhance the training and the protocols to make sure that the protocols are followed. The protocols work. We have decades of experience caring for patients with Ebola, but we know that even a single lapse or breach inadvertent can result in infection. So figuring out how all of the things that we can do to minimize that risk, such as those I went through, reducing the number of healthcare workers, reducing a procedure to essential procedures, having a site monitor there, these are all things that we'll be looking at closely. We'll go to the phone for questions.
Thank you. We'll begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and say your name clearly. I'll introduce you by name. Our first question comes from Dr. Richard Besser, ABC News. Ask your question.
Yeah, hi. Dr. Frieden, you were saying how difficult it is to implement proper infection control and how one slip can be so dangerous. Is there any consideration of moving to a system where you would move patients to these specialized units where they actually are trained instead of treating them in hospitals where they really don't have that training?
We're going to look at all opportunities to improve the level of safety and to minimize risk. But we can't let any hospital let its guard down, because a patient, an American returning or somebody else coming into this country who had exposure and maybe didn't even have an awareness of that exposure, may become ill. So we do want hospitals to have the ability to rapidly consider, isolate, and diagnose people who may have Ebola. Again, anyone who's been in Guinea, Liberia, or Sierra Leone in the past 21 days and who has a fever or other symptoms should be immediately isolated and evaluated for Ebola. So I would distinguish that diagnosis needs to be done anywhere. Then thinking about what's the safest way to provide that care, that's something we'll absolutely be looking at.
Thanks very much.
On the phone, next question.
Thank you. We have Michelle Salcido with AP. Ask your question. Check your mute button. Michelle Salcido. Go to the next question. We have Caleb Hellerman, CNN. Your line is open.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could, Dr. Frieden, if you could, or Dr. Lake, if you could say anything more about the kind of extensive contact, you know, what was the role of this person who's become infected, and also if you could just clarify the monitoring process. I mean, you're saying she was self-monitoring. Are some of the other contacts getting in-person visits, or just what is exactly the process for taking her temperature and reporting in, if you could clarify that? Thank you.
So I'll turn that over to Commissioner Lakey, and I do want to really thank the Texas and Dallas health authorities who have been working around the clock since the diagnosis of the first patient and have monitored every one of those 48 patients and taken their temperature and have now intensively surged to address this latest development. Dr. Lakey?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. The 48 individuals that had been known to have contact or potential contact, those individuals have daily had a on-site visit where they saw one of the epidemiologists and then had a subsequent fever check later in the day. The healthcare workers where there was no breach in contact were doing self-monitoring. And so in light of this this case, we're looking at the ongoing monitoring of all the healthcare workers and looking at that going forward, having a epidemiologist see them and more active surveillance for these individuals. And again, the healthcare workers where there had been no breach in personal protective equipment had been doing self-monitoring up until today.
And if I could just quickly follow up, this woman was not in that group of 48 contacts. She was an additional person. And do you have any sense of how many more people this might expand that to?
This individual was not part of the 48, and we're looking at defining what that new number is, working on that pretty hard right now.
Thank you.
In order to identify that number, we cast the net wide. We identify first anyone who might have had contact, and then we do detailed interviews and record reviews with each and every one of them to identify those who definitely did have contact, those who definitely didn't, and those for whom we cannot rule out that they had contact. We'll go to the next question on the phone.
Question comes from Denise Grady with the New York Times. Your line's open.
Thank you. Dr. Frieden, could you please explain and clarify what you were talking about when you said try to limit things to essential procedures? What does that mean? What's essential and what's not essential? How do you limit procedures and not compromise the
patients? So in terms of limiting, first, as we do everywhere Ebola patients are cared for, we try to keep to an absolute minimum the number of healthcare workers who enter the area. That reduces risk. Second, we try to ensure that the procedures that are undertaken are kept to the absolute minimum. So, for example, a blood draw to monitor electrolytes is very important. But if someone is not having diarrhea and vomiting, maybe it only needs to be done once a day rather than multiple times a day. I'm not saying that was done differently previously. I'm just saying that's an example of how we might limit things to essential procedures. Next question.
Question comes from Betsy McKay with Wall Street Journal.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Frieden, I was wondering if you could comment a little bit more on the preparedness of hospitals, regular hospitals that are outside of this, these biocontainment units that have treated the other Ebola patients who have come to the U.S. Do you think this incident, what do you think it says about the preparedness generally of hospitals around the country? Is it an outlier, or are you concerned now about hospital preparedness? And the other just related question is, you mentioned that now an infection control person infection control official should be monitoring in hospitals. Is that a guideline for all hospitals, or were you talking specifically about this Texas hospital?
So let me answer the second question first. In Ebola treatment units in Africa, one of the things that we've identified as a potential contributor to infections that have occurred there is the lack of an on-site manager at all times who doesn't have any specific responsibilities other than overseeing and supervising everything that's being done to make sure that infection control is being done correctly, that the procedures are being done correctly. I was saying that we will ensure that that is done going forward in Texas. At this particular hospital. In terms of your first question, very important to distinguish for infection control the physical layout from the procedures and policies and training and staff work. In terms of the first, the demands are not extensive. There are some special demands in place, like an anteroom, for example, a room before for people to take off and put on protective equipment. But it is not a disease that spreads through the air, so it doesn't require some of the most intensive infection control physical procedures. However, on the personnel training, supervision, follow-up, monitoring, it is very clear that the necessity of doing this right 100% of the time does require a very intensive training, follow-up, monitoring process. Next question.
Next question comes from Evan Brown with Fox News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call and doing this morning. Dr. Frieden and Dr. Lakey, if you could respond to this question. One, how frustrating is this for you after saying we're going to stop Ebola in its tracks, and to know that a breach of protocol among a professional is what caused this new transmission? And two, is it shaking your faith in hospitals around the country to adequately educate and prepare their staff?
I'll start and then turn it over to Dr. Lakey. It's deeply concerning that this infection occurred, and our thoughts are with the healthcare worker who was providing care and appears to have become infected, if that test is confirmed, in the process of that care. That doesn't change the bottom line here, which is that we know how to break the chains of transmission. We need to ramp up the infection control for any patient suspected or confirmed as having Ebola, and we need to do what we've been doing with contact tracing and monitoring. If you go back to what happened here, she identified symptoms immediately on their onset. She was isolated promptly. At this point, it looks like there is one additional contact, potentially, from that illness period. That individual does not have fever. So we're looking very closely at that, but it doesn't change the bottom line. The bottom line is we know how Ebola spreads. We know how to stop it from spreading, but it does reemphasize how meticulous we have to be on every single aspect of the control measures, from rapid diagnosis to effective isolation to effective care with infection control to scrupulous contact investigation. Dr. Lakey?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. I guess I'd like to second what Dr. Frieden said. I firmly believe that we're going to stop this here. We have to be very careful. We need to closely look at the practice, the infection control practices as they are occurring in the hospital to be meticulous to make sure that there are no breaches. You know, is it frustrating or disappointed? Of course it is. Our hearts go out to his family, to the healthcare worker that is infected, and she's going to have a rough time. And we need to be continuing to make sure she gets the care that she needs. I think we have been doing contingency planning for situations like this. I think one of the things that I've learned in disaster response, you have to have a little humility in how you approach things, be very cautious with how we approach things, and we need to continue to do that and continue the contingency planning. But do I doubt that we're going to stop this, the spread here in this one hospital? No, I firmly believe we will stop it. Thank you.
Next question.
Question comes from Katie Dominick with CBS News.
Hi, yes, Dr. Frieden. I was just wondering if there was any updated guidance on when screening would start at the additional airports that were announced last week.
So yesterday we began screening at JFK International Airport in New York City. That screening went smoothly. There are a lot of lessons being learned through that to make sure that screening goes smoothly for passengers, other passengers. As we said before, we're anticipating starting screening at the other four airports this week, and we anticipate that starting on Thursday. Next question.
Jeffrey Weiss with Dallas Morning News.
Yes, can you speak to how a healthcare worker using these high precautions apparently caught the Ebola when people who had close contact in that apartment for several days did not? And do you have any plans to transfer this new case to one of the specialty hospitals, Atlanta or Nebraska or someplace like that?
With regard to the first question, when patients have Ebola, they become progressively infectious the sicker they become, because the amount of virus in their body and in their secretions increases. And the people who had contact with this individual, the index patient in Dallas, prior to his isolation, are not yet out of their 21-day exposure period. So we're not out of the woods yet with potential additional cases among contacts before isolation. But medical procedures involve dealing with blood, dealing with body fluids, diarrhea, vomit, other things that may have very large quantities of virus. And that's why the personal protective equipment and the protocols are so important, because as someone gets sicker, they get more infectious also. We will look at all possibilities to ensure the safe care of patients to the greatest extent possible. Next question.
Question, Lena Sun, The Washington Post.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. I was wondering whether either you or Dr. Lakey could clarify. This healthcare worker was not in the initial group of 48. So earlier this morning, Varga said there were 19 hospital employees that they were tracking. So is this person part of that 19, or is it part of a larger group? That was one question. And the second question was, the hospital, by its own track record, has not provided the best information. They've had to do a lot of walkbacks. I know the hospital initially said this morning that there was low-grade fever. Are there any other symptoms? Is there any other information that we need to parse further, given the hospital's track record in not providing accurate information initially?
I'm sorry, I've forgotten your first question.
Is this person part of the 19 the hospital is tracking, or is it a larger group of people? Yeah.
So the 48 contacts identified were individuals who had contact with the index patient up to September 28th, the day that he was isolated. This individual was not exposed in that period of time. We look at time periods for exposure. Those 48 are, as for everything we know, the only people that he may have had contact with before he became isolated. In terms of the care there in the hospital, from the 28th to October 8th, the date he passed away, that's a period of 10, 11 days when there may have been additional contacts, given the fact that this individual clearly was exposed then. That's what's being investigated now. So that first contact period, contact tracing period, identified what we still believe is all 48 who were exposed up to the time he was isolated. Now we're doing a new investigation, given the diagnosis late last night of this individual, of anyone else who may have been exposed once he was on what should have been effective isolation. In terms of the clinical status of the patient, I can say that our information is that as of at least some time back, she was showing only mild symptoms and low-grade fever. Our team lead did interview her directly, and we'll continue to monitor very closely to ensure that she gets the best possible care. We'll take two more questions on the phone.
Next question comes from Donna Young.
Thank you. I wanted to find out specifically with this patient, the new patient, why was she not, because you've kind of gone around this, why was she not initially included in the 48 that were monitored? And then also I wanted to ask Dr. Frieden, when he was over in Africa, did you take special precautions that you normally wouldn't have with the putting on the protective equipment? Thank you.
So as I just indicated, we monitored all contacts up to the time of the index patient's admission on September 28th. Given this apparent infection, we will be evaluating and then monitoring all contacts who may have had exposure during the hospital stay. I'll ask Dr. Lakey to comment further on that or any other issue in a moment. In terms of precautions in Africa, yes, they're very specific. For personal protective equipment, taking it off, putting it on, and what happens there. Dr. Lakey?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. I really don't have much to add besides what you provided. The healthcare workers that were in full PPE, personal protective equipment, during their involvement in the care of the initial individual were classified as minimal risk. And those individuals had guidance to do self-monitoring, but were not in that 48. And so this individual was doing that, and the earliest signs of illness, checked her temperature and what was evaluated. Thank you.
We'll take the last question.
Last question comes from Lisa Schneering with Sid Rabin.
Hi, thanks for making such great information available today. I'm wondering, how common is it for people to be on dialysis or to be intubated during an Ebola infection? Is that something you've seen in other patients treated in Western countries? Just wondering how common that is and how often healthcare workers have had to deal with those situations. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I don't know the details of the other patients cared for in other parts of the world, but I'm not familiar with any prior patient with Ebola who has undergone either intubation or dialysis. Certainly, it would be very unusual if it has happened before. I do want to clarify one thing. Of the 48 contacts being monitored, including the 10 who are known to have had contact, that does include healthcare workers who had contact with the index patient before he was isolated on September 28th, but doesn't include anyone after September 28th. Before I make a couple of concluding remarks, just turn it over to Commissioner Lakey for anything more you want to say.
Well, thank you again for your support. Obviously, a very trying day, a very busy night, work that's going on, to make sure that we fully understand what happened and can make sure that the hospital has the expertise, the infection control practices that they need to prevent any other individual from being exposed to this virus. Again, appreciate the healthcare worker on the earliest signs coming in and being cared for appropriately. And, again, we're bringing in the resources we need to fully understand this as quickly as possible. So, again, my appreciation to the CDC for the work that they continue to do to assist us. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Leahy, and thank you for the terrific work your team in public health is doing there. We really do appreciate the partnership. Your work on the ground makes a really big difference, and we're honored to be part of the team doing that with the state and the city and the hospital. Bottom line here, we're very concerned that a preliminary positive has been identified among a healthcare worker who provided care to the index patient. We will have confirmatory testing later today at CDC. We will identify any additional contacts, both of that individual before they were diagnosed and other individuals who may have provided care for the index patient and similarly may have been exposed, and actively monitor those individuals. We will also undertake a thorough investigation to understand how this may have happened, and we will ramp up infection control to do whatever we can to minimize the risk that there would be any future infections. And finally, our thoughts go out to the healthcare worker, their family, understanding how difficult a time this is for them and for other healthcare workers who now may have been exposed or now known to may have been exposed and need to really go through that anxiety-producing time. These are the individuals who we need to monitor. This is how we break the links of transmission. It is possible that we will see additional cases in those who had contact with either of the two patients, but there is no doubt that we can break the links of the links in the chain of transmission. We've done it before, and we'll do it here, and the team in Dallas is doing an excellent job making sure that happens. Thank you all so much for your interest in covering this topic.
Thank you. This concludes our update on the Ebola response in Dallas. For media who have additional questions, they can contact the CDC media through 404-639-3286. Thank you.